the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab number 247 for Wednesday, March 3rd, 2010.
Welcome to the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab. I am Dave Hamilton here in dark New Hampshire. That is a state of being. And John Braun is down there, and you're in Fairfield still, right, as far as we know?
Which is light. It's actually rainy, snowy. Yeah. No, mostly rain. I don't know. We're blessed here, and you're not. You're cursed. I don't know what it is. Fortunately, you're well prepared with your generator. Otherwise, you would be in the dark.
Yeah, we had a windstorm last Thursday night. One of the biggest storms the area's ever seen. I think one town over in Portsmouth, they clocked winds at 91 miles an hour. Trees down everywhere. And our neighborhood, our area in general, was one of the hardest hit. Our neighborhood was one of the hardest hit within that. And we've got one stretch of trees. They're still working on them now. They're working on it. They've cleared the trees. Now they have to rebuild. It took down power lines and poles. So they finally rebuilt the pole yesterday and are building, restringing the lines. So we're hoping to get power today, but this is day six of this lovely outage. Tree-mageddon is what they're calling it, or at least that's
oddly
what they're
enough,
calling the paper.
Well, obviously you have... Internet, I found that kind of unusual that they got that working.
Well, so here's the thing. Oftentimes when the power goes out, even with lines down in this case, the cable lines are still active. And I think this is my theory, but I think it's because they're coming in from different angles. So, you know, you could think about the TVs in your house, right? I mean, you can have them all in a loop essentially, and it doesn't matter, and it just works. So I think either there's a loop where there's multiple points at which it connects to the cable network for the neighborhood, or it just so happens that the path that the cable lines take in is not the path that's ever been hit. But what does happen is the cable lines, you know, the power will go out and the cable will work for several hours, usually 5 or 6 hours, and then it goes dead. And what happens is at the head end, they've got battery backups on all their stuff, and of course they lose power just like the rest of us do, and so you know it powers down out there, and then you lose service even if the connection is still good. But the other day, I think we were about what 3 or 4 days into this, I saw some Comcast trucks in the neighborhood, so I decided, and I'd been trying once a day just plugging in either a TV or the cable modem or something to see if it would sync up, and when we got home, I plugged it in, and sure enough, we've got, you know, full digital cable, and obviously the cable modem is working, and you and I are talking on Skype over it right now.
Okay.
But so. Yeah, our power is generated. We have a portable generator connected to the house, and the reason I did the portable thing is because the house and the office have two separate power feeds, so I wanted to have the option of doing both without buying two generators. So we wired them up appropriately, of course, using what they call Gentran boxes, which allow you to pick which circuits are going to be on the generator, and you either have them online, off, or on generator, and that way you're not ever crossing the circuit and feeding power back into the system, because the electricians and power line operators don't like that for obvious reasons. And so we've got that going. So I am actually in the house. I chose not to do this in the office today, John, because it was like 40 degrees over there, and I didn't want to have to wait for it to heat up. So I'm in the house on what would normally be my travel setup. So I have my laptop, and I'm using, for the first time, I'm testing out this Yeti microphone from Blue. They gave me a sample at Macworld Expo to check out, so I wanted to do a podcast with it at some point. I figured it would be when I was traveling, but I am traveling. I've just traveled across the driveway. And there's the phones in the house ringing and all the normal noise interruptions that we disable in the studio. But it seems to be okay. I can't get the zero latency monitoring to work, so I'm hearing myself on a bit of a delay, which isn't all that much fun, but I'll deal with it. So that I think that describes what we've got going on here, John, yeah?
Yeah. No, you're sounding good.
Good. All right. So we have... As I was going through and prepping the show yesterday, John, I found we have more stuff in the cool stuff found category than we've had in a long time. So let's do some of that cool stuff found. Yeah. But
well, it's understandable though, because we have at least I think very cool listeners. So
I think that's exactly
it would. Yeah. So it makes sense that we have an abundance of.
Yeah, and keep sending this stuff in. It's great.
Okay. Anyways, but you were saying.
Yeah, before we do that, I want to talk about our first sponsor, which is Smile on My Mac with PDF Pen. Now, PDF Pen is a program that you can use to manipulate and edit PDF files. You can pull an existing PDF into it, rearrange it. You can annotate it. You can edit the text if the text is in text form as opposed to graphic form, and it works really, really well. I had to change the date on something, and instead of going in and like drawing a line, actually the first thing I did with PDF Pen was I drew a little line and then, you know, put some extra text over it, and I thought, wait a minute, I can edit the text. So I removed those, I highlighted the date, I hit the little edit text button, and it popped up, and sure enough, enough of the font was embedded in the PDF that it just let me edit it, no problem, and I was able to make it look clean and nice and all that good stuff. So PDF Pen also has an OCR engine built in, where if you do scan something in that doesn't have editable text, it will convert it to editable text and make saving the PDF much smaller, because instead of it being an image, now it's just text. So this is all available at smileonmymac.com for $49.95. But of course, there's a free trial. You get it for 30 days to test it out, and they even have a 90-day money-back guarantee on top of that. So check it out, smileonmymac.com, PDF Pen. All right. You with me, John?
I'm with you.
All right. My monitoring is a little weird today, so forgive me if I talk over you. Just keep...
PDF Pen.
If I start talking over you, John, just keep talking and I'll shut up. All right. So the first thing that we have on the list comes from Kirk. And he writes, here's a pretty cool system preference pane that I just stumbled on. It sets itself as the default browser and gives you a choice of which browser to open for any link that you click. If a browser's already open, it can be set to just open it in the already running browser. Pretty cool for someone who changes browsers more often than he changes shirts, relying on stuff like 1Password and X marks to keep passwords and bookmarks in sync. And the preference pane is called Choosy, Choosy, and it's available at ChoosyOSX.com. So, John, I guess if you click on links in email and you want to have it open in Safari or Firefox or OmniWeb or whatever, you can have this app set as your default browser, and really it's not a browser at all. It just lets you pick on the fly which browser you want to send those links to.
Yeah, I tried it actually, and you got to fiddle with it a bit to tell it, do you want it to come up if there's one browser open and all that. I put it in the mode where no matter what link, and you can ask it what's the links, and so I put it in the mode where it actually comes up, and it's kind of a translucent thing, and it shows all of the potential apps that could handle the URL, whether they be browsers or sometimes an FTP program or something. No, I like it. It's because, I still run into this when I was doing taxes and stuff like that. There are still websites, two of them. One is my power company. Now, they provide power, but they're it's either my power or my gas company. Well, one of the two, but I go to them. No, it's United Illuminating. I go to their website. First, they put it on this stupid port 9944, their billing interface, and then they come up and immediately say, oh, we don't work with Safari. Get Firefox. I'm like, guys. The other one is State of Connecticut, same thing. I go to them and they're like, we don't support Safari. They're smart enough to know that you're on Safari, but not smart enough to design their website to work with Safari, which kind of irks me. So this is something nice to let you avoid that sort of headache. Or the other thing, actually, I mean, you probably know this, but at least in Safari, and I'm sure other browsers, you can kind of the poor man's version of this, you can change the user agent. That's probably not the best solution because it's still working within the limitations or the characteristics of the browser. But I do that sometimes you can enable the debug menu in Safari, and then you can set the user agent to try to trick the person on the other end into thinking that you're on a different platform or different browser.
Right. And if you don't need those capabilities that are unique to that browser, sometimes tricking it can work with that debug menu. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool. Moving on. Are we good?
Yes.
All right. So the second thing, a couple of weeks ago, we had a discussion about wanting to have the calculator always open and always on top. And we had a couple of different solutions for it, and you can go back and listen for those. Jason wrote in, and he said, I too had the issue that Chris had with wanting a calculator that always remains on top of all windows. I took a different approach and learned Objective-C and Cocoa and created my own app that's a calculator in a Mac OS X heads-up display window. After hearing that others may be interested in the app, I spent the last couple of weeks finalizing the app for prime time, and I'm calling it HUDCalc. I'm letting anyone use it for free, and it can be downloaded at my website, and it's at morehelios.com/HUDCalc, and we'll put a link in the show notes. But keep in mind that I'm still calling it beta, even though I heard your rant about that, so please don't wag your finger at me, since I'm a man with little resources to fully test the product to a true 1.0 release. I think it's so cool that we had, you know, essentially a geek challenge solved by someone that has learned Objective-C and Cocoa to create an app that does it. So thank you, Jason, and you can go check it out. John, now, John, you checked it out too, right?
Yeah, it's I believe he says it's beta, so keep that in mind. But yeah, it basically did what it advertised. It hovers over everything else. You know, I think it's kind of translucent or, you know, more on the solid side. And it's a basic calculator that is always there when you need it.
That's awesome. That's awesome. You said you did have a couple of crashes with it, or a couple of buggy.
Not crashes. No, I actually did have and I'll have to document these for Jason. But I had a couple of situations where I, you know, would type in an equation and I hit equals and it didn't come up with a result. If I hit AC, I guess is all clear, okay, then everything was fine. But again, you know, it's a beta.
Cool.
And I don't know what, you know, API he's wrestling with, you know, for input and stuff like that. So I'll have to reproduce it. And that's always a good thing for, you know, any, you know, shareware or beta. I mean, the reason it is beta is because developers are looking for feedback. So, you know, the best thing is to try to document fully what you did. Hopefully it's reproducible. Those are the bugs that all of us developers hate, the ones that sometimes happen. So so I'll document what I did. I may have been doing something screwy. I don't know.
Sure. Cool. Thank you, Jason. All right. You know, the other night I was saying, oh, yep, here I am on the couch. Before cable came back, we were using the MiFi, which was a lifesaver because at least we were able to get online and, you know, our family could get online with their iPhones and our laptops and our netbooks and all that stuff. And I tweeted something about it. And Andrew wrote back on Twitter and said, oh, you need to check out Flux, especially if you're computing in low light or in the dark. And so I did, and it's from at stereopsis.com. Again, we'll put a link in the show notes. And what Flux does is you tell it, okay, you know, it figures out your time zone. It knows when the sun goes down, when it comes up, and when you're going to be on what would be, you know, lighting inside your home. And you tell it what kind of lighting you have, you know, fluorescent, halogen, et cetera, et cetera. And then it changes the white point of your display gradually throughout the night so that so that your computer doesn't give off that eerie blue glow in the dark or in low light situations or in artificial light situations. And it's cool. You know, I'm sure people who do, you know, graphics work and color matching and all that for a living would hate this, definitely. But it's so much better. My wife and I have been using it on our machines at night. And it is. You don't see that blue glow coming off of it. And it does. It changes it. It makes it, you know, kind of more red or more orange depending on what's going on. So very cool. And then, of course, when it's daytime again, it sets it back to whatever your normal white point is, and you're good to go. So definitely a cool thing to check out. It's called Flux, or F.Lux, I guess is how it's done. Did you check this out, John?
Yeah, I tried it too, and sometimes I'll, pull out the laptop at night, and now fortunately, I have my system set up for, it always asks for a password on wake up.
Okay.
And you know, even though I'm the only one here, I'm still just practicing good security. It always asks for a password when it wakes up, and at that point, the screen only has the dialogue. Asking for the password. And if I don't remember to lower the brightness severely because the room's totally dark, I'll get blasted with a bright screen and it hurts a little bit. So
you're talking about the next thing that we're going to discuss. You're not talking about Flux.
Okay, I'm talking about situation I run into, which is a great lead in.
Yes.
But no, I saw this and yeah, it changes the temperature, which I agree with you. The screen temperature is something that, yeah, it doesn't, yeah, it would screw up your color matching, but it makes it, yeah, a lot more palatable to the eye depending on your inside lighting. Yeah. So yeah. I did try this and it was neat because yeah, it does it gradually. At first I'm like, is this thing working?
Yeah.
And it is just very slowly. So it doesn't really shock. Yeah. But, yes, I inadvertently did a lead-in into the next one, David.
Into the next one, which is called Brightness Control from Splasm.com. And what this does is it gives you one slider to control all your max displays and dim them down so that you can be sure that your Mac isn't going to you know, have a big bright screen if you've got it on like in a hotel room or whatever, where, you know, the Mac might wake up in the middle of the night and now suddenly the room is lit and you think it's daylight and you've got to get up and all that stuff. But John, you said you had a problem with this brightness control thing when the password window came up. Is that what you're saying?
Not really, no. But when I activated this, it seemed that this also grabbed on to the screen temperature because all of a sudden my screen got almost oversaturated using this.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it looks like, and there may be, I just tried it very quickly. I tried almost all of these things that we're going to talk about very quickly. And the only thing I noticed is while it was running, it seemed to drive the screen temperature to at least on my LCD on my portable, it seemed to almost be overdriving it, or it was too saturated for my taste. And usually there's a setting somewhere, screen temperature thing, when you fiddle with color sync and things like that.
Yeah, yeah. Huh. Interesting.
So I got to look into it further, and maybe I missed a setting.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. All right, moving on to the next cool thing found. We've been having our discussion of alternatives to Quicken for managing your household or personal finances. And Alan writes, after trying several different pieces of software, I finally settled on Moneywell and have been using it for more than a year now. It's a great program because not only does it let you track previous expenses, it also helps you in planning future ones and take control of your budget. It's basically an implementation of the envelope system, but it has many other features, including the possibility to connect to your bank and download the data. I highly recommend that you check it out at nothirst.com. And I went back and asked, how will it import Quicken data and how does it do online banking? And it's online banking is using Direct Connect. So it's not even forcing you to go through the, you know, slurp down the file and import it in unless your bank forces you to go through that process, and some do. But as far as importing your data, it'll support all the Quicken export formats. So I don't think it will read your Quicken file directly, but it will read a file that you've exported from Quicken to pull in to Moneywell. So we've got a couple to check out. We've got Quicken Essentials, which is, of course, the new thing from Quicken. We've got Moneywell, and we've got Money Dance. And I've started playing with the latter, Money Dance, and I'm going to check out the other two as well because I think I'm done with Quicken 2007, but I need to find something that works as well. So. And what you don't use any of this stuff to manage your finances, is that right, John?
Nope. I use stickies.
Stickies. Hey, you know what? You're not bankrupt, right? And the bill collector isn't beating down your door, is he?
No, basically so what I do, I use a combination of systems. So one, I use stickies and I basically just make a note of all my recurring payments. A lot of them actually I have, you know, happen, but I try to keep as little in my checking account as possible because it, draws, you know, pretty much zero interest. I think it's 0.01 or something like that.
Sure.
But I typically don't keep a lot of money in there unless it's necessary. And just, you know, a few days beforehand, I'll make sure that the money is available there. And on stickies, I keep the schedule of things. And then also I use this envelope system he was talking about. I actually do that. So a couple of bills, I'll keep the envelopes out and scribble the due date on them. And then again, a couple of days beforehand, I'll go online and schedule it automatically. Now, yes, I could make my life easier. I don't know. I'm kind of nervous about payments happening without me at least explicitly, authorizing them.
Sure.
a lot of the systems are good because actually, like, you know, Cablevision will have this and a few others will have it. Is I just don't want an unexpectedly large payment to occur when I didn't expect it. And then all of a sudden I'm overdrawn and you get nailed with like a $35 stupid overdraft fee.
You're right. Yeah. The only ones that I'll let it do automatically are those utilities that will bill to my credit card, because at least that way I have an easy recourse before it hits my checking account if there is some error, and I earn points or miles or, you know, whatever.
True.
It is.
And actually, that's the one I do, and actually one of mine actually gives me extra bonus money for utilities. So yeah,
okay.
Like a cable and electric. Yeah, you know what? That I wish all of my payments would go to the credit card, but I guess a lot of them, they don't want to do that because, you know, there is a small percentage hit.
Yeah, you lose about 2 to 2.5%. Yeah.
Yeah, so they still prefer going right to the checking account. Yeah. Makes my life a little bit more difficult.
Yeah, yeah, I'm with you. I'll let my mortgage hit the checking account, and I think our life insurance I've now got set up to hit the checking account every 3 months or whatever. But otherwise,
I may explore these. They could, you know, give me the big picture. I have the big picture mm-hmm. in my head, but it'd be nice to, you know, see an analysis. And I've even noticed some of my credit card companies will break it down now. I mean, it's both useful and scary. I mean, they'll say, okay, you know, you spent this much on food and on gas and on this and that, and,
right.
you know, do spend, you know, or trend analysis and, you know, help you understand what you're spending your money on, if you care.
And then it's like that old Saturday Night Live skit, right, where they'll call you up and say, now listen, did you really need that new pair of shoes you bought yesterday?
All right.
I'm finding the pacing of this show a little bit slower, John, and I think it has a lot to do, from my standpoint, with the fact that I'm sitting in my living room on the couch.
Oh, you're on the comfy chair.
I am in the comfy chair.
Picture.
Yeah. All right. So the next thing that we found is called Versamatic. It's from the Acer Tant, the same folks that brought us TuneRanger, right, for managing the iTunes libraries. And what Versamatic does is it gives you the ability to go back. You right click on any file and it'll show you any document, and it will show you all the revisions of that file that it has now saved, and it looks really, really cool. So worth checking out. Now, you know, I'm looking at their webpage. I know they told us it has Mac support, and yet now I'm looking at their webpage and there's nothing about Mac support on it. So either there's a – don't download this, folks. Unless you're on Windows, in which case it looks really cool. I don't know why I have this in my list. Huh.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, I'll mention one that you can put on the list, Dave.
Okay, good.
I do know works for the Mac, because this sounded very similar to something that I did a Monday's Mac Gadget about. And it is called ForeverSave.
Okay.
And I actually evaluated they have a light version, ForeverSave Lite. And basically what this program does is it'll kind of hide in the background, and you tell it what applications you would like to automatically save.
Okay.
At what frequency, be it 15 minutes, half hour, whatever you're comfortable with, and it'll do that for you. Some programs have this, but many do not.
Right.
And the light version, I think, doesn't have any of the things that was hinted at here, which is like version control and stuff like that. They do have I think, ForeverSave regular version. That is a pay program.
Yep.
And it does include what we're talking about here, which is version control, which is always nice. And even, and actually we were chit-chatting on the Mac Roundtable the other day, and it's worth noting that Dropbox has this ability. Not in the sense of a formal version control system where you can say, bring me back, or at least I don't think so, but it'll let you recover things that you, accidentally deleted. I don't know how far back they go, but it's very nice that it lets you do that.
It goes back 30 days. Dropbox okay. will do this. It goes back 30 days in the free account, and then I think it might be forever, but it's certainly many months on the pay accounts with Dropbox, and it works. But the trick is, if you're not connected to the internet and it doesn't have the opportunity to upload your interim changes of whatever documents you're talking about to the Dropbox server, then it's not the version control isn't happening on your Mac. It's happening on the server. So if you're not in sync with the server for whatever reason, then you won't have there may be some iterations of whatever document you're working on that don't get saved. So it's version control, but it's not built to be version control, so it's not airtight. But yeah, Dropbox will do this as well. So, all right. So yeah, I don't know why I had Versomatic on there, but any Windows users, check it out. All right, Graham writes. Graham writes. I got to find Graham's email. Okay. Where is he here? Okay. We talked about, now I'm in business now. So a couple of weeks ago, we talked about Parian and Flip for Mac. Parian being a suite of plugins that you install on your Mac, and it makes QuickTime a whole lot more compatible with other video formats out there. And Graham from I believe it's code3r.com, wrote, I thought I should add that Parian is not a replacement for Flip for Mac, but rather intended to work alongside it. Flip for Mac does have some functionality that Parian does not replace, specifically WMV files, WMP streaming, and others. So we recommend having both installed. Basically, Flip for Mac has done some things which are relatively difficult to do within QuickTime's architecture, and since they had already done them for free, it enabled us to concentrate on other aspects they did not cover. And so I asked Graham, I said, well, you know, can you add any context to this relatively difficult idea for what Flip for Mac? And he wrote, yeah, QuickTime's architecture is not designed to handle formats where an individual audio or video frame is not a single contiguous block of data. And apparently WMV has this issue. So Flip for Mac told QuickTime about a block containing audio and a block containing video where the two blocks are actually overlapping and then sorts out the data in the decoder. He says it's a very inelegant solution, but in general, it seems to work. So he then says the only I should also add that this limitation is the only thing preventing us from supporting MPG files and several other formats. And there's a bug available on Open Radar if anybody wants to learn more about this. But in general, use Parian and Flip for Mac to enhance QuickTime's ability to open various different file formats, and they're the kind of things you install them, and then you don't even know when they're being invoked. So I highly recommend it.
Mm-hmm. And as a standby, but because I've noted, I use this sometimes because I've seen some shortcomings in I believe it's Flip for Mac. I've noticed this that loading certain WMV files when I load them,
yep,
it'll sit there and I'll see a little almost like progress bar on the timeline in that. It seems to be like parsing or digesting the file in that you can't jump ahead to the middle or the end until you wait for a little while. And I find one thing that's both good for and something that you want to put in your geek tool belt for reading video files is VLC player.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
That actually came in handy actually when we were at the when we did the our live deal at Macworld. The gentleman came up afterwards. And he had a video camera with a memory card, and he gave it to me. And being a trusting guy, I took the memory card. I had the adapter with me, of course, in my geek tool belt. Put it in my machine, tried to load in QuickTime. Sure enough, it didn't understand it. And I'm like, oh, wait, hold on, let me try this. I dragged it over to VLC. Voila. Now, if I had those plugins, it probably would have worked as well. But I find VLC is always a good standby because it understands. It has its own way of dealing with the files. Also, it doesn't seem to suffer from this problem with WMV files, is that if I load a WMV file, the whole thing is available to me. I can jump to the beginning, to the end, to the middle,
right
away. So, yeah. So just something you want to have at your disposal in case either of those plugins don't work.
Cool. Yeah, that's right. No, I agree. Yeah, VLC is something you can't live without. And it's free, so there's no reason to live without it. All right. Let's see what Jason has to say here.
Hey, guys. This is Jason Tucker. I wanted to call and tell you a little bit about this program called Prowl that I've been using on my iPhone. Prowl is a program that lets you get your growl notifications on your iPhone from your Mac. What it is it's actually its own little notification application running on your Mac as like a growl display component, I guess you would call it. I don't know the exact terminology for it. But instead of having a pop-up bubble or whatever come up, it'll send this information to Prowl, which then sends it over to a server and gets displayed on your iPhone as a notification. Mind you, this is a pay service, and it's I guess it's just a one-time fee to purchase the application. What's neat about it is once you set that up, so instead of having a little bubble show up, it'll send it over to Prowl. But in Prowl itself, you can specify what pop-up you want to have be displayed. So it's just like a way of being able to push this information from Growl to Prowl and then back to a Growl pop-up. One of my favorite ones is music video, which kind of just shows up at the bottom of the screen for a moment and then disappears. So you don't have any like anything displaying on your screen on your Mac, like a bubble or anything. It just does a little video overlay for a second, then goes back down. Anyhow, take a look at Prowl on your iPhone. It's really good for being able to track different things and be able to get all sorts of information onto your iPhone. All right, well, I'll talk.
Awesome. Thank you, Jason. Oh, okay. I cut him off as the traffic was increasing behind him. But, Growl is something I have come to terms with. John, you've talked about Growl before. Why don't you, just in case people don't understand what Growl is, and then we'll kind of explain this Prowl thing, but just in case people don't understand what Growl is, why don't you tell them, John?
I would say Growl, if I had to call it something, I think I'd call it a notification manager.
I like that.
What it does is when you run it, and they provide an API, so it's so they provide a platform where applications, if they choose to do so, can hook into it. And this actually, it's a pref main, and if you look at it, you'll have the applications that talk to it. And what it does is basically puts a little little window that comes up on your screen. You can tell it how you want it to look and the duration and stuff like that. And it's kind of a not totally intrusive way of letting you know that important things are happening. I have it hooked into, I'm looking on my G5, but I have it hooked into Dropbox, for example. So if something interesting happens on Dropbox, it'll let me know. It'll say, oh, some files have been added or some files have been deleted or changed. Like, for example, I run this so I know when Dave is starting to, or just to see if something's happening in my Dropbox folder.
Yep.
So one thing is that, when we're exchanging content, if you're adding content to our Dropbox folder, then I see it. Skype, it'll a number of applications. It's not for everything. Some things can get very chatty and you may not want to know about them, but,
and you can Dropbox, turn those off.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Right.
They're within the Growl panel, each application that registers itself with Growl, there's a check mark where it says enabled, and you can, of course, turn that off. So you have full control over how you want it to work.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And I think that was my problem initially, was I installed it, and by default, anything that can talk to Growl will. So I suddenly had all these notifications. iChat stuff was coming up in two places because it was in iChat and it was in Growl. Skype stuff, two places. The Dropbox thing was constantly, my Twitter clients were all, it was just all over the place. Like, whoa, notification overload, dude. And so I just turned off Growl. I'm like, I'm done with that. But then I had a use for it, and that is the daily super duper backups that I have my MacBook Pro do. And I wanted to be notified if they failed, especially, but also I found it comfortable to know that they succeeded. So I wasn't thinking, gosh, how long has it been? I haven't seen a notification. Does that mean that they've been backing up okay, or does it mean that there's something wrong with the notification framework, right? And so now I have it notify me, and that forced me to go into the Growl pref pane and go through and disable notifications for all but those few things that I want that. And now I find it really, really valuable. This Prowl thing sounds cool because if there is something about which I want to be notified regardless of whether I'm at my Mac, so if it's really important, you certainly could use that to extend the notification to wherever it is you are.
Oh, yeah. Like your example is excellent. So if a backup or other important operation either succeeds or fails.
Right.
And you may want to set it up just to tell you if it fails. Well, you probably want to know if it succeeds as well.
I think you could do that. I think you could have it notify you only on your Mac if it succeeds and only on your phone or both if it fails. So you can – I think it's extremely flexible, but because of that flexibility, it takes you time to set it up.
Yeah. The one thing that I like – so another app that I like using it for, it kind of complements them, is a lot of these wireless scanners, and a couple of the ones that I have will – bring up a notification if, a new access point happens to show up or if one goes away.
Sure.
And that can be kind of good supplemental information, especially if it's running in the background. this is the nice thing. It kind of gives you a hint. And then what they include with it, which pretty much replaces something which was an old favorite of mine, but I don't believe works very well under Snow Leopard, is something called peripheral vision. And
okay.
What peripheral vision does, and what the package they include with Growl, it's optional, called Hardware Growler. And this may be something where you'd want to get alerts as well. If any piece of hardware is or a network volume is either mounted or dismounted or disconnected from your machine, it'll tell you about it. So say you want to know, for whatever reason, if somebody is, for instance, somebody's plugging in another drive or another mouse or something into your Mac, Hardware Growler will tell you about this. And I find it also good for diagnosing hardware problems because it tells you at the very lowest level, like say you got an external drive and it's all screwed up and you don't know what's going on. If at least the USB or FireWire interface is working, it'll at least tell you that, saying, hey, I saw a USB interface or I saw a USB device.
Got it.
I think it's very useful to isolate problems, to figure out what level they're occurring. You know, so for example, if the USB interface is shot, it's not going to even come up with Hardware Growler, and that'll help you take appropriate action.
Oh, that's very cool. That's cool. Cool. All right, are we ready to move on here?
Indeed.
All right, Albert wrote in, and this is a question, but it leads into something cool. He says, I hope I'm not going insane. Don't worry, Albert, you aren't. Or if you are, you're in good company. But I'm sure you guys spoke about a utility to manage your downloads folder. I've searched the show notes and don't seem to find anything. It must have been about a year ago, and I'm sure it was Dave who mentioned it. If I can recall, it auto-deletes old stuff and even does some organizing. Indeed, Albert, you are correct. We did. We mentioned Noodlesoft's Hazel, H-A-Z-E-L, named after the maid of course, the same name. This is, it's funny that we mentioned this back-to-back with Growl because this is one of those programs that you need to spend some time configuring it before it's valuable for you. And then once you do, I think its value becomes one of those things where you couldn't possibly live without it. So they have a 14-day free trial. I think it's $20 or something to buy after that. But make sure that you download this when you've got a couple of hours, maybe not a couple of hours, but an hour to spend going through it. What it does is it essentially sits there and monitors all sorts of different things that are happening on your Mac. The thing that Albert's talking about, it sits and watches your downloads folder. And you can have it do different things. You can apply rules. You can say, throw away. If I download the same thing twice, throw away the duplicate. If I have incomplete downloads, throw them away after a day or a week. And then you can set up rules that say, look, if it's a movie and it's from this one website or whatever, put it into my iTunes and assign it to this library and then open the file or whatever. You've got all these if-then conditions that you can apply, similar to how you'd use rules in Mail app, but these are applying to files. It'll also monitor files when you delete an application. So let's say you take an app and you throw it away. It'll say, hey, wait a minute. I notice you just threw away, Firefox. Do you also want to delete all these other files that are related to Firefox, preference files and all that stuff? So it can be really handy for keeping your Mac clean, especially if you're going to be doing some spring cleaning. Again, you don't have to do this. You can choose to keep them all. You can choose to keep some of them. It's very explicit about what it's doing when it's going to go and delete this stuff, but very handy. And then you can, it's got, some other things. You can, it's Spotlight with it, various other stuff. You can, I think it's got some trash management, tons of stuff. But again, you've got to spend some time going through it. Otherwise, you'll find that it's useless and you'll say, why did I download this? Why did Dave and John tell me to get this? So, it's one of those things I have not. Every time I download it, I don't have the time, and I wind up turning it off. But then we'll talk about it here. I'll be at a user group, John, talking or something, and somebody will ask a question that results in Hazel being the answer. And it's like, oh yeah, I gotta go check that out because I think it'll be something I can't live without. So that's that. Do you use Hazel, John?
No.
No.
I'll have to look at it.
See,
I'm trying to think of a reason that I'd need to, and actually, you suggested a few, so.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things we just need to dive right in. Mm-hmm. Maybe a 2010 resolution. By the end of the year, we'll be using Hazel. Honestly, it seems like the kind of thing that, you know, Apple should just, you know, buy or steal and bake into the OS. I don't recommend that they steal it. I recommend that they support indie developers, but that's, you know, it doesn't really matter what I think, because Apple's going to do what they want to do. Right?
Yeah, we're seeing that right now.
Yes, we are.
But we're not right. We're not the litigation podcast, so we're not going to talk about that.
Okay. Our second sponsor for this show is Circus Ponies with Notebook. Notebook's an app that lets you take all the data and files and pictures and PDFs that you have related to any given topic and bake them in together into one place. Notebook, it starts out with a white lined paper notebook interface like you've seen in, you know, countless times before. In this case, though, of course, it's on your computer. And so you can start typing, and you can type whatever you want. You can go into hierarchical mode so that you're building an outline. And then you can start, and you can have multiple pages all in the same notebook, so all in the same topic. And then you start pulling in different bits of data, and you can annotate this data, right? So you can pull in a PDF and say, okay, here's this, and you can attach some keywords to it. And then you can pull in a picture and annotate it. And all this stuff is lined up right where you've pulled it into the notebook. So it's all very contextual. You could have some notes about it, and then you've got the picture. And the stuff isn't separate. You don't have the picture as a separate file and the document as a separate file and the PDF as a separate file. This lets you pull it all together so that you've got one cohesive place to go, and whatever the topic is, you've got all your data right there. Then you can search within the notebook, and you can, you don't have to know what you're looking for. You can if you know what date you put it in, you can go check it out that way. If you know a keyword that you assigned, you can check it out that way. If you know some text that you typed around that time, you go there, and then, you know, as long as you had placed the picture or whatever it was you were looking for, boom, you've got it right there. So this is Notebook from Circus Ponies. It's circusponies.com. And of course, it's available as a free download. And then once you're hooked, you can use it for 30 days, and then you pay for it, $49.95, and it's available at circusponies.com. All right, John, let's use this little break here to move into our follow up section. Does that sound wise?
Okay. Did you get that little note I sent you there?
No. But okay. I can look for a note.
Okay, I put something to you.
John's mentioning my mic technique, which I'm sure is different today because
I just hadn't noticed before.
Yeah, no, thank you. Whatever. Yeah, there's no.
It's a new mic.
There's no pop filter here, and I also have no compression on either one of us. We're just going raw.
I'm turning into an audio snob, Dave.
No, that's a good thing. That's a good thing. I'm actually going to back the mic away a little bit so that I'm talking across it as opposed to at it, and maybe that'll keep the pops down. But anyway,
so the follow up. I love this. So I think the last one, which was the startup chime. You were aghast, Dave, and you had recalled, or it's speculated correctly that we both did, I think, that you know, you should be able to squelch this thing somehow.
Yeah,
but you verified for me because I had not tried all of the options. You had done a follow up to make sure that that my machine wasn't broken or anything.
I did. I sat here. In fact, I sat right here on my couch over the weekend. We were watching a movie or something. Thank goodness for the generator, by the way. It's allowing this podcast to happen. But so I took some headphones and I plugged them in and I restarted my Mac and sure enough heard the startup chime. Okay. And then I took a little the mini audio digital audio adapter that also fits into the headphone jack and I plugged that in and started my Mac and I also heard the startup chime. And, you know, we had a listener write in saying, I think it's important to note that the startup chime, the speakers are, or audio on the Mac is routed via software. It's not controlled via hardware, meaning that there is no hardware break. A lot of times, you'll, if you plug headphones into, you know, some device that has speakers, there's actually a physical disconnect that happens when you plug the headphones in. Audio is physically routed to the headphones instead of the speakers. So you can't have both happening at the same time. Well, on the Mac, that's not the case. You could, in theory, have audio routing out the headphones the same time it's going through the internal speakers. And previous versions of Mac OS allowed us to do exactly that. It was very, very handy because, you know, in certain situations, if you had headphones plugged in, but you also wanted to make sure you heard things through your speakers, you didn't have to unplug the headphones to do it. The Ooh. Current version of Snow Leopard, and I believe Leopard, so 10.5 and 10.6, have not allowed us to do this. It's been one or the other. But it's important to remember that even though the OS doesn't let us do it, it is software that's controlling this. So when the machine starts up, there is no software that says route the audio another way. It's just, you know, it's baked into the machine saying you're going to play this sound through the speakers. Now on laptops, it will play it at whatever the previous volume was, and that's where you can control it, is if you mute the volume before you shut the machine down. And like we mentioned, there are some utilities to do that. But there it's not a hardware break. So
okay, because it appeared to be, based on prior older machines that I've had, it appeared to be a hardware break.
I don't think it's ever been a hardware break, to be honest.
Okay, it just appeared to me because, correct, yeah, plug in the headphones and it doesn't come out the speakers.
What this one listener pointed out was, start some music playing or start some sound going, and then midway through, plug in some headphones. And you'll hear there's a delay. It doesn't immediately start coming out the headphones. There's a lag between when it kills the speakers and when the headphones start working. And again, it's just software rerouting itself. And you can even see it if you go into your sound control panel. It changes from built-in speakers to built-in headphone jack. So it's all very aware of what's going on, which is interesting, you know. So moving on. All right. Les writes, in regards to our waking your Mac from sleep conversation that we had, there's one other reason for a Mac to wake from sleep. If you have an Apple TV, it can request information from the Mac at any time. I was walking by my iMac when it sprung to life and began syncing with my Apple TV. By the way, I know you guys don't have an Apple TV, but I recommend it for watching high-definition podcast. Thank you, Les. And, you know, this reminds me of something. If you are running, I believe it's Snow Leopard. Yeah, it's definitely Snow Leopard. If you're running Snow Leopard and you have somewhere in your network an Apple router. Now, it doesn't need to be your main router. It could be in bridge mode. It could just be a time capsule sitting somewhere that's not doing any routing. But as long as it's there, what will happen is your Mac, your Snow Leopard Macs, will register with that router and say, look, I've got file sharing turned on. I've got iTunes sharing turned on. And I've got remote desktop, you know, share my screen is enabled. And then the Mac will go to sleep. But what will happen is that router will continue to broadcast that Mac at that IP address has all these services available. So you'll, even though your Mac's asleep, you'll still see it in the sharing section in the Finder there if you had file sharing on, or in iTunes or whatever. And when you try to access that service, really what's happening is you're accessing the router, although you don't know it, and then the router sends a wake-up command over to the Mac that in question, and it wakes it up, and then of course the request goes through. So that's another reason that your Mac could wake up. If somebody sees, oh, his computer's on and he has iTunes sharing enabled, I want to listen to a song, that will wake your computer up mysteriously. So that's a yet another thing to keep in mind with this.
Yeah, I don't like the Apple TV. I'm sorry, it's an extension of iTunes. I'm not into it. Now you see the sexy new thing that TiVo just announced.
Let's talk about this. I know something happened last night, but I wasn't fully aware of it. What's going on?
Well, I don't know. I just saw, so they had a countdown last night. But, yeah. I think it's basically what you and I have, the Series 3, and they add a few additional features. I don't think it's worth it for us to upgrade, but this looks like, you know, the box to get.
Okay, so it's called the TiVo Premier, right? Is that what
yes,
it is?
Yes, Premier and Premier XL. So it gives you way more HD programming space. I think it now allows you to plug in an antenna, where I don't believe you could do that with our version.
Yeah.
You know, my TV lets me do that. If I want to do on air, I can plug in. But and I think just, you know, access to, and this is my big gripe with Apple TV. Apple TV is an extension of iTunes. It's not a downloadable video device or download purchase or download rent device, where the TiVo is definitely positioned. I think they pretty much get anybody who offers video on demand, the TiVo will do it. And I think they announced the new remote that'll have a QWERTY keyboard and all sorts of, I don't know. You and I both love these guys. They just keep kicking it up a notch here. So for you and I, again, for you and I don't think it makes sense. It doesn't seem to be like a huge leap in functionality. But if you had to get one now, this looks like the one to get.
Yeah. Okay. I get it. The one difference that I can see, you know, and I'm just learning about this as we're talking about it, but it's that it will do 1080p, and I don't believe my Series 3 TiVo will do 1080p. I think it'll only do 1080i. No. Is that right?
That's correct. That's correct. We can only do i. Now, of course, your cable provider has to offer p, which I do not know if mine does or yours does.
No, but downloaded videos can do 1080p.
Or
Amazon.
Blu-ray. Or if you have a Blu-ray.
But you're not going to do that through your TiVo.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. But you could also, I mean, you could make a 1080p video on your computer and stream it to your TiVo, and it, as long as your TV supports 1080p, then you're in good shape. So, okay. Oh, that's interesting. Okay, cool. And apparently there's some upgrade path for existing TiVo customers. So I'll take a look. I have a dead TiVo Series 2 box. So maybe this is my path to upgrade to Premiere.
Oh, yeah, because I actually did that on the site, and if you click on the right button, it says, "Oh, could you please, if you please log in, we'll give you the upload option but the upgrade options for the ones that we have on file that you own." So
yeah. Ah, okay. So I could upgrade and get lifetime service with it, which would be cool. So, huh?
All right.
That's interesting.
All sorts of new toys. All right. So think about it later.
I'll have to think about this. Well, for $300, I could get one with lifetime service, and I keep my Series 3 and I put it on a discounted service plan. So,
Well, I think, if you looked at it, I think that's what they do typically, is that the last time I upgraded it is that they would let me transfer the lifetime to the new device and then basically put a year left of service on the old device, which I then sold to the person basically for the price of the 1 year of service, because the device itself really, it was a Series 1.
Yeah, right.
Which was
right.
Nice. Okay, right. Enough about TiVo. We're not the TiVo podcast. Though I thought it worth mentioning because, you know, I think it merits a comparison to Apple TV, which, you know, if they just added hooks without you having to hack it to let you download from people other than Apple, I think it'd be a worthy contender.
Yeah, interesting. All right, we'll have to check this out. All right, Steven. We'd been talking about, again, this waking up of Macs, and there was some discussion over some of us being able to uncheck the wake up for Bluetooth access box so that your machine wouldn't wake up for Bluetooth access. And Steven actually points out why that may be. We thought it was permissions.
Hi guys. I'm listening to episode 244, and you're talking about the iMac that's waking up from sleep, and they can't disable the allow Bluetooth devices to wake this Mac. I'm wondering if the reason why that preference is not available to be switched off is because if you have a Bluetooth keyboard and a Bluetooth mouse, how can you wake up your computer from sleep if you don't allow Bluetooth devices to do so. So that might be the reason, and it wouldn't be disabled on yours, say if it's a laptop and it has its own keyboard, or, you know, if you have a physical or wired keyboard plugged in. So I think that might be the reason why. So it wouldn't be a damaged plist file.
Got it. Cool. Thank you, Steven. That makes perfect sense.
That hadn't occurred to me.
No, it hadn't me either.
You probably need at least one pointing device and keyboard on any Mac.
I think that's a safe bet. Yeah.
So yeah. It's doing something smart for you, I think.
Yeah, no, that's a good thing. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Anything here, John? We're getting short on time. Is there anything, any of these questions or any of these follow-up tips that you want to go through?
Yeah, let me look at the questions here.
All right. Well, let's you know what? You do that while Kevin gives yet another thought on our Geek Challenge about having an open recent items hotkey available. Take it away, Kevin.
Hi, John. Hi, Dave. It's Coder Kev, and I just heard on Geek Gab 245 on the Geek Challenge. Another program that would have worked also is FastScripts, which FastScripts Lite, the free version, gives you 10 keyboard shortcuts to launch scripts with. And, you know, if you pay the $14.95 for the full version, then you get an unlimited number of keyboard shortcuts. Just thought I'd throw that out there. Listening to you on my Mac, because for some reason my iPhone is playing you at double speed. I've had all kinds of problems since the iPhone update. Don't know why. Talk to you later. Bye.
Thanks, Kevin. And yeah, to address that problem that Kevin was mentioning about the iPhone playing it at double speed, we've had a couple of people report that. But the problem is on your end, in that it, and Kevin figured this out, that there is a way of telling it to play podcasts faster or slower than they're built to be played. And you can adjust that right in the iPod interface there on the iPhone or on the iPod Touch. So where are we going next, John?
Let's go to David.
David, all the way down here, cross-platform encryption, huh?
Yes.
Okay. Let me find him here. And here we go. David writes, I have a MacBook and I sometimes work off a friend's Mac. I also have a Windows machine at home I sometimes use, and a Windows machine at work I'm forced to use, both running XP, plus the occasional friend's machine I may sometimes have to use. I've come to rely very heavily on USB drives to cart files back and forth with me. These devices are great, but their tiny size makes them very easy to lose. I've lost them out of shirt pockets, been unable to find them in my office, and just generally misplaced them before. Usually I eventually find them again, but not before I have a heart attack thinking of the compromised data on the drives. I want to be able to encrypt the contents of my USB drive to avoid problems that should someone else find one day. But how do I do this across platforms? I've seen programs for Mac and programs for Windows that claim to do a great job securing data on portable drives like this, but I haven't yet found one that can be used on either machine. Does something like this exist, John?
And the answer is, and I will link to a gadget that I wrote about this, the answer, and I tried it, is yes. And the answer to this is TrueCrypt. TrueCrypt is open source, free. I believe it's open source, but it is a free multi-platform that it works on Mac, on PC, and on Linux.
Okay.
Way of encrypting. Now, the only caveat here is that you have to use it in a specific mode here. So one thing it will do is encrypt an entire partition or device. So if you want to take a USB drive, and encrypt everything on that, this will do that for you. And then you use their corresponding utility to mount and dismount the volume. Though I think on the Mac, if it installs MacFuse, so you actually don't have to use the utility, it'll just mount it.
Okay.
The only caveat is that if you're going to do cross... Now, another mode that they offer is what's called an encrypted container, which is basically a file
that you store like in a device. Image.
And here's the thing. So initially when this question was posed to us, or you posed it to me, I'm like, you know, as we both know, or if you don't know, or the listeners don't know, disk utility lets you do one thing, and it lets you create an encrypted disk image. Now, here's the bad news. It's a .dmg file. That's pretty much specific to the Mac. Or at least I hadn't found any way to process an encrypted .dmg file on an operating system other than Mac. And the other thing I looked for, which I'm surprised didn't exist, and maybe nobody came up with a standard, but ISO is just the, and ISO is a pretty much a cross-platform, you know, way to represent the contents of a you know, disk and I would think a drive, but I couldn't find an option to do an encrypted ISO. So the only thing here is that you're going to have to use a partition scheme that, that, you know, both machines understand, which I guess would be MS-DOS or FAT16.
Okay.
NTFS won't work because normally you cannot write to NTFS on the Mac. If you only want to read,
right,
then you could.
Right, of course.
So you could do an NTFS formatted device. And then if you only want to read it on the Mac, then you're good to go. If you want to write it on the Mac, then this would not be. So to me, this is a solution. It's
cool.
It's cross-platform. It's free. And they even include, a link to the gadget I did because it talks about a couple other clever things they do. And with any of these things, always choose a good password. That is key to this. They actually yell at you if you choose stupid password, like password or something like that.
Sure.
Because the password is what creates the encryption key and pretty much secures everything. So TrueCrypt, check it out. I think that'll do it for you.
Awesome. All right. Well, I think that's our cue, right, to bring the band in here.
Wow. Time just flies.
Time flies when you're having fun. And plus, I want to see if they turned on my power yet. And I won't know sitting in this room. I can't. I have a light on in the office that would come on if the power came on. I also have a light on in another room in the house, but I can't see either of those from here. So I want to see if they turned it back on. They probably haven't. You know,
Dave, we totally forgot to mention how people can get in touch with us.
All right, go.
206-666-GEEK,
which is 4335. You can also call us. Oh, no. You just said how they can call us. You can also email us at feedback@macgeekgab.com.
Last I checked, that was feedback@macgeekgab.com, Dave.
That's right. feedback@macgeekgab.com. If you want to send in just for the premium show, that's premium@macgeekgab.com. But for everybody, that's feedback@macgeekgab.com. We also have Skype voicemail, which can be sent to MacGeekGab. Just open up Skype and place a call there. You should be rerouted to our voicemail, and most folks have been. And I think that does it, right? We're good?
iTunes comments are always welcome.
Yeah. iPhoneAlley.com is where Michael Johnston is when he's not converting this to AAC for you. Cashfly.com, CacheFly, provides all the bandwidth to get this from us to you. The podcast marketplace includes the A2 desktop speakers from Audio Engine, Yojimbo from Barebone Software, PDF Pen from A Smile on My Mac, Notebook from Circus Ponies, and GoToAssist.com/Gab gets you your free trial for GoToAssist Express. All of this through the Backbeat Media Podcast Network. And I think, John, I think that does it. That gets us out of here. Hopefully this show actually recorded and you're all hearing it, but I think we're okay on that front.
Yeah, Twitter, John F. Braun, Dave Hamilton, MacGeekGab.
Yeah, follow us on Twitter. Say hi. Ask us questions there. We're happy to help when we can. And if we can't, sometimes it gets included in the show, too.
Oh, and Dave, I almost forgot to tell you. I got so close this weekend, but I managed not to get caught.
Made up.